This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to our Tuesday top 10 list, plus all these openings in college football. Which ones are or should be the most desirable? We'll get to that coming up. And a big win yesterday for Dawn Staley's squad in the Bahamas, and the latest on Coach Blockham and his health update after his scare last night at Cameron Indoor. Plenty to do coming up. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You could send a message to the show. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. And you can also find those podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. You know, I always have felt that anytime someone calls to the show, if they take the time out to call, ask a question, you know, I always feel the responsibility to make sure I give a proper answer. We were tight for time last segment when Stephen Somerville called and asked about Dabo dipping into the transfer portal. Let me just circle back to that briefly. Now, I've made my feelings known throughout the year. You could go back to the podcast and find more of my thoughts on the subject, but I have always felt that Clemson should be using the transfer portal. I don't see any sort of negative to it. You may not like the direction that college football is moving in with, like, the name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal and, you know, maybe even coaches making the amount of money that they are. It may not be the college football, you know, the playoff system now. It may not be the college football, the sport that you grew up with or that you loved, or for these coaches that they came up with. And things are changing, and none of us like change, even if it's a change for the positive, right? We're all set in our ways. We don't like to operate differently, and this is a different way to operate, using the transfer portal. You now have to recruit kids for all 4 years, not just once they get on campus. You don't just recruit them when they're in high school. You have to recruit them all 4 years they're in your program or beyond to make sure they're happy and they want to stay put. Instead of just recruiting high school kids, you also now, I mean, teams are hiring staff members specifically to work on the transfer portal, to see who's available, to talk to, you know, these kids in other programs, to try to get kids in the portal. It's a whole new way to operate. But it's the way that the sport is going, and if you're not going to take advantage of it, that's fine. If you have your reasons, you don't like it, whatever it is, but other teams will, and that's the point I've been making throughout the year. I mean, Alabama has taken advantage, Georgia, Michigan State, even Cincinnati. These are teams that important pieces of their teams this year and the success they're having have come through the transfer portal. You look at some of the quarterbacks that have won national championships recently. They were transfers. I don't see a downside to from a football coach to the transfer portal. The downside would be losing players more, you know, losing players easier nowadays because of the transfer portal. But if you're at Clemson and Alabama, you could get whoever you want in that transfer portal, and you can plug holes quickly. And you can go get kids who are, you know, veterans who have already played in college football, who are not 18 years old coming out of high school, having to build up their bodies. They're developed and 20 years old and already played somewhere. In the case of Clemson, the example I've been using, you know, is that offensive line has been an issue for them over the course of the season. There were some good offensive linemen that went elsewhere in the transfer portal. There are at least four who transferred and are playing at other Power 5 schools, a couple in the SEC. I think Notre Dame grabbed one this year, right? So there were some good options there. You could bring them in, plug in some holes. Maybe things would be different. I just haven't seen a reason why you wouldn't use the portal, and especially if other teams are, right? Either you adapt or you fall behind, and your competitors are going to take advantage of another opportunity that you're passing on. And so I think it gives you a competitive disadvantage if you're not going to use it like those other teams. So I know Dabo mentioned, I think it's going back to last week, he said that they will recruit the transfer portal. You know, he said, the quote is, you don't have a choice. That is the world we have created. I think some of it's kind of just stubbornness. Some of it was you don't like the direction it's going. I get that. We all deal with that, right? Your boss makes a new rule or they come up with a new policy at the company. You don't like it. You like how things were. You don't think it's necessary. Maybe it even makes things a little more difficult for you. But you can either sit back and think like, oh, I'm not going to do that, and allow your coworkers to get ahead of you because they're following the new policy, right? Or you can, for lack of a better term, kind of get in line and take advantage of it as well. Because for Clemson, it could really be a benefit. They're the type of program that anybody in the transfer portal would want to go to. So it's just another tool for you. It's a weapon. It's like that old expression, right? You could give somebody a hammer, and they could use it as either a tool or a weapon. Same idea here. And the point of that being, right, you can either use it for good or bad. But for Clemson, you know, this is another tool for you. This is another option. It's another tool in that tool shed. That for Clemson, you got a hole in your roster, go see if there's somebody in the transfer portal. Because you know they would love to come play for your program. So I never saw some sort of negative for Clemson using it, and I think they would be wise to use the portal moving forward. And those are more of my thoughts on that. We usually, you know, circle back to the biggest story of the day here in the final hour of the afternoon. You know, I was planning on coming in today and just talking about the big win yesterday for Dawn Staley. And then also, you know, maybe sharing a little bit of my experience last night at Cameron Indoor, because that's like the mecca of college basketball. And if you've never been, you know, I was hoping to try to take you behind the scenes and kind of explain what it was like from our perspective, at least the broadcaster of the visiting team, to be in that building and to work or operate there for a night. And then unfortunately, the story becomes, you know, about Coach Baucom's health, which is just a terrible thing. Scary situation last night. If you're unfamiliar, the Citadel head coach, Coach Baucom, collapsed in the opening 90 seconds of the game last night, had to go to the hospital. He's still there at the hospital, and the latest update is that he is waiting to be released. They're just waiting on the green light. If anybody has ever spent any time in the hospital, and hopefully you haven't, but if you ever spent any time or a loved one has spent any time, you know that even when you're ready to get out of there, it can be quite the process to actually be able to get up and walk out of there, whether it's the paperwork or this or that. They got to check some boxes. So it looks like Coach is waiting to be released. He's just waiting on the green light before he can officially be let out of the hospital. His wife said that Coach had her following the game last night while they were in the ER, of course. And as Coach said, he is so proud of each of his players and Jack Castleberry, who stepped in, and the entire staff. So that's the latest. Scott Eisberg, a friend of the station, got the text from Coach's wife with that latest update. So we continue to hope for the best for Coach Baucom, and everything seems to be okay in terms of getting out of the hospital back to Charleston. We'll see what's next for him, but it was a scary situation last night. Now, I gave this disclaimer earlier. I am still on the road in North Carolina, and when I try to play audio myself, sometimes you get audio off the internet. It doesn't come through very well, so we're going to try it again. But here was Jack Castleberry, assistant. He's actually the associate head coach. He stepped in for Coach Baucom last night, leading the team. He joined us on the postgame show, and he, of course, had to do the postgame press conference for the Citadel as well. Here is what Jack had to say yesterday about Coach Baucom and just that situation as it unfolded last night at Cameron Indoor, and I hope that this comes across well, this audio playing it offline.
No. I mean, he talked. I mean, he was coherent the entire time. But, you know, he just said that he was in pain.
Well, so much for that. It updated. The website refreshed. Anyways, Coach Castleberry just saying that Coach Baucom is the toughest guy that he's ever met, and so when he was in pain, he knew it was something serious. He was coherent and awake. You know, he was alert. He was never unconscious. He was talking with Jack when it happened, and he just told Jack that he was in a lot of pain. And as Jack explained, you know, when he says he's in a lot of pain, it's serious because, as Jack said, he's the toughest guy he knows. But he went on to say that those players, they went out there, they battled against Duke last night, and in large part for their head coach. You know, that's a tough situation. When you start a game at Cameron Indoor, you just tip it off. They just made a three to tie it, and then you look over at the bench and your coach, you know, had collapsed, and there's a really scary situation and the medical personnel's over there, and then you go back to having to play a game afterwards. We see it a lot in football, you know, when there's an injury and a guy has to go off on the cart or on a stretcher, and it's like, okay, now try to go back to playing football after one of your brothers and your teammates just had to go to the hospital in a neck brace, and it happened on a football play, and now you have to go try to make a football play after you just saw that, right? And that's a tough situation to bounce back from. And for the Citadel, they certainly fought every minute last night, made a record number of threes for a visiting team at Cameron Indoor, and hung in there. It was a 10-point game in the second half. They ended up losing by 26 to the number 5 team in the country. And Duke, obviously, just have so much talent. 4 All-Americans. They had all 5 starters last night, scored in double digits. They don't do anything too sophisticated. Coach K doesn't have to do a whole lot of coaching. He sits over there on the bench, and he lets them kind of do whatever they want. They have one play that they call a lot that's called 45. Coach K will just flash his fingers on the bench, you know, 4-5. All it is a simple pass to the elbow, clear out, and it's an isolation usually for the number one player, the number one recruit that they had in Paolo Banchero. And that's pretty much it, right? It's kind of like an NBA offense just because they're so athletic. They have so much talent. They can score at all five positions. Coach K just sits over there in his farewell tour and is like, okay, you know, roll the balls out. You guys go do whatever you want. And they scored over 100 points last night, albeit against the Citadel. But that Duke team, they have a lot of talent. And up until last night, they were playing some good defense. Yeah, you know, that's usually the downfall to these teams, like a Kentucky. Duke in recent years, go back to Zion Williamson's team. You know, like, the guys can score it, no doubt about it. You got some good scorers, you got some athletes, but do they want to play defense? Do they want to give that energy, that effort on that side? Do they want to play together as a team and play good enough defense, or are they just worried about scoring? You know, are they just athletic? And in the case of this Duke team, they've been really good defensively this year up until last night. The Citadel scored the most points on them in 9 games going back to last year. They shot over 50%, first team to shoot, you know, 50% or better against Duke. They made 18 threes. So it's obviously a really good Duke team. It was a good effort last night, though, from the Citadel, even in the loss. Which takes me to this. The big win yesterday, and it came in women's basketball. And it was while we were on the air yesterday. And Dawn Staley's Gamecocks team beat UConn in come-from-behind fashion. And on that same topic, they did it with defense. They fell behind by 13, ended up winning by 16, and held UConn to only 3 points in the fourth quarter. A lot of times with these basketball teams, especially in college, because, again, you bring in these 18-year-olds from high school. If you watch the NBA, rookies, second-year guys, they usually struggle defensively as well. They're catching up to the speed, the size. They're trying to figure things out as they go. You know, maybe they're just not good enough. They're new into the league. It can be similar in college basketball, that you bring in these talented kids out of high school. They may be able to score immediately at the college level, but the defense is the next thing to come. And so when you're a good team that can also play defense, you're a step ahead of everybody else. Because so often you'll watch a team and they can score it. They got plenty of scorers and good shooters and they can do a lot of things offensively, but they don't play a lick on the defensive end. And when their shots aren't falling, right, then they get in trouble. And a lot of times you see in the tournament these talented Kentucky or Duke teams, or, you know, even like a Jim Boeheim in Syracuse, right, they underachieve. They got plenty of talent. They can score. They just don't D up well enough in the biggest games. Yesterday, that was not the case for Dawn Staley's team. They played D and they held UConn to only 3 points in the fourth quarter to come back and win. And now already this year, they've beaten 3 top 10 teams all on the road. You couldn't have a more impressive start in women's basketball. And they beat UConn for just the second time yesterday, the team that they always struggle to clear that hurdle against. And to do it this early in the year, to do it with defense, to do it in come-from-behind fashion, was a big-time win for South Carolina. You couldn't draw it up any better yesterday. The only way it could be any better was if you never fell behind to begin with, but that almost makes it more impressive that you fall behind by 13. And how many times have we seen South Carolina go up against UConn in years past and almost seem like the moment is a little too big, right? Like they couldn't match up, and especially if they fall behind early and they don't have that fight to come back. I mean, that wasn't the case yesterday. They fell behind 13, and if you're a fan, if you were watching that game, you know, if you were fortunate enough to not be working and you're able to watch a big-time basketball game at noon on a Monday, I don't know why they tipped that game off yesterday at noon, but if you were watching it yesterday, and you're a Gamecock fan, you could have been thinking something along the lines of, you know, here we go again, as they fell down early and were not playing well against UConn. But they rallied in the second half, got a big win, and beat the Huskies yesterday. Those two teams will play again in January. So this was the first test. It's almost like, what were they called, the progress reports back in school? Or like the mid-semester grades, where it was just to see where you were. They weren't the final grades, but it was a checkup to see where you were so far through the semester. And that was this case, right? It's early in the year, but this was like a little bit of a checkup to see, okay, which team is better prepared here 2 weeks into the season. And for the majority of that game, it was South Carolina. Now they're going to play each other at the end of January when they already get into their conference schedules, when they have played for about 3 months, and that will be like almost like the final grades. It's not going to be the end of the year. They'll probably play one another again in the Final Four of the National Championship this season. But that will be almost those final, okay, which team, we saw the issues. We saw what happened the last time you faced off 2 months ago. Who's gotten better since then? And that's what we'll get at the end of January. But that was a big win yesterday for the Gamecocks and the way they did it as well, to beat UConn and to do it with defense. To hold any team to 3 points in a quarter is remarkable. But to do it on a neutral floor against the number two team in the country, when that team is UConn and what they've accomplished all time with Geno, right? That was a fantastic job done by the Gamecocks to get a big win yesterday in the Bahamas. When we come back, we'll get to our Tuesday top 10, but we'll also rank of the openings in college football, which jobs should be the most appealing. We'll get to that coming up as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, of all the openings in college football, which one should be the most appealing? We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Still got our Tuesday top 10 to get to coming up before we go this afternoon. We're a show that loves rankings. We love lists on the Morrow Midday Show. That's what started the Tuesday top 10 we do every week, because I figured, well, we're always doing so many rankings and I love alliteration, so we'll designate Tuesday as at least we got one list in at least once a week, and it's usually more than that. We're going to do another ranking here in just a moment with all the openings in college football. You have Virginia Tech, Miami, Florida, LSU, Washington, USC. In fact, Miami shouldn't be included yet. I'm getting ahead of myself, but those other ones are the openings right now in college football. There's a lot of speculation about Miami. That's why I said yesterday in the show, this could be the craziest coaching carousel we've had in college football. You got big-time jobs. LSU, Florida, maybe Miami, USC. And then on second tier, Washington and Virginia Tech are still good jobs. And we're of course, going to get the buzz. Right? You're hearing a lot about Billy Napier for Florida. Dan Mullen now being talked about going to Virginia Tech. That would be interesting. You know, so you're going to get all these rumors, and the schools and at least the fans are always going to have these big dreams. You know, could we get Bob Stoops to come out of retirement? Right? And they have, Urban Meyer want to come back to college for USC? And then eventually they'll settle on an actual realistic candidate, and that's who you'll wind up with. Maybe it's James Franklin going out west. But as you look at these six schools, we had a listener call into the show yesterday talking about Jimmy Sexton. Jimmy Sexton is going to make a lot of money this offseason because probably all of these vacancies are going to be filled by his clients. That's just how college football works. He is the ruler of agents for college football coaches. But if you're Jimmy Sexton and you sit down with one of your coaches and say he's drawing some interest from everywhere, where should you be most interested? If you could pick any of these schools, who should you pick? Let me order them. I said when this became available at the time, and I'm still sticking with it, I think USC is number one of the jobs that are available. Now, I'm obviously in the minority because the idea was when USC became available, the reports were that coaches and agents wanted to wait to see what was going to happen with LSU and Ed Orgeron. We have now found out since that he, too, is going to be out of a job, and they, too, will need a head coach. And in the circles in college football, amongst the agents and coaches, they obviously hold LSU in higher regard nowadays than USC, in large part, I'm sure, because SEC versus Pac-12. But I still put USC at number one because of the Pac-12. Right, so like if you were making a pro and cons list, for USC, some of the pros would be the history. I think that's important. They've shown that they've won. People have cared. You have that history to fall back on. You have the cool uniforms. You have the documentaries made. You have all the talent that's come through there. You used to have, in Pete Carroll's era, you used to have, you know, stars because you're in Hollywood's backyard. You used to have all these people on the sidelines. Snoop Dogg would be there and these different actors. And, you know, it was a big deal. And you wanted to watch those games. And it was must-see TV. I think that's important, something to draw back on. You're also in California. Now, a lot of that talent's leaving the state, but I think the right coach at USC can keep that talent in the area, and there's plenty of talent to choose from out there. That's where Clay Helton really failed. He did a lousy job in that state. I don't think it's too late to turn it back, right? They're going all over. I mean, the quarterbacks, you look at some of the programs where they get their quarterbacks from. Clemson's getting quarterbacks from California. Alabama, right? They're going elsewhere to the other programs. If you get the right coach in there, he can keep some of that talent. I forget the exact numbers, but it was something like USC in the last recruiting class had just one of the top 60 players in the state committing to them, something along those lines. They lost everybody You got to keep that talent there. There's so much talent to choose from. You could do all of your recruiting. There's only a couple of jobs like this. You can do your recruiting without probably ever getting on a plane. Right? I mean, you could fill a good college football team simply in California. You could just drive to all the schools. So that's a big boost or a big pro for USC. I think a pro is also the Pac-12, while it's also a con. The pro is that you have an easier path, right? Like Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll and USC dominated in that conference. And then what happened? Harbaugh came along to Stanford, right? And things changed, got a little more difficult. You had some other coaches come into that conference where the other coaches got better, the other programs got better, and USC suddenly wasn't as dominant as they once were. But you can now, with the Pac-12 seemingly in the same spot, just without USC, you could go there and you have an easier path to a playoff, to winning conference championships, and enough talent in that area that you could still bring in a good enough team to compete for a national championship. I put USC number one, LSU number two. I do think it's really close. For LSU, you know you can win. The last three coaches have all won national championships there. You have no competitor in that state, no Power 5 school you have to compete against in that state, and there's plenty of talent in Louisiana. You're in the SEC. That's a pro and a con. The pro is you're in the SEC. That's the conference you want to be in. That's the premier conference. You get more money than anybody. You get more attention. Players want to be there. The con is, well, it's also the toughest conference to compete. Right? I mean, that's what comes with being the best. You want to compete with the best, or you want to be the best. You got to compete with the best in the process. So that's the tough part there. You'll have an easier path in the Pac-12 than you will the SEC, but it's the Pac-12 compared to the SEC. You're not making as much money. You're not getting the primetime games. Kids maybe rather go to the SEC than the Pac-12. And then, of course, for LSU, the pressure. You can win a national championship and be fired a year and a half later. At USC, they held on to Clay Helton probably longer than they should. Right? I mean, you know, it's not as pressure-filled as the SEC is. The SEC fires more coaches than anybody. And so if you're a coach, I said this yesterday, same with Florida, right? You're looking at jobs and you're thinking, well, that is a good job, but I mean, they may fire me after one down year. I could go to this other school, and they could have a longer leash for me, which takes me to Florida. I think Florida would be number three on my list for some of the same reasons I've already mentioned. It's Florida. So much talent in that state. You could probably do all your recruiting without ever getting on a plane, even though Florida's a big state. You may have some long drives, but you can get it all done in that state. And right now, that state is open for the taking. You look at Florida, all that talent in the state, and they're looking at the schools in the state. Who's winning out right now? Miami? Florida State? Florida, this is the opportunity for Mike Norvell at Florida State. It's an opportunity for whoever Florida hires. If Manny Diaz stays at Miami or they bring in another coach, this is the opportunity that you become that premier program in that state that gives you the edge in recruiting. Another pro, of course, the SEC. Con, well, also kind of the SEC. There's this idea that there's a ceiling to Florida. I've said this many times about Michigan. Michigan fans, their expectations are just too high. They're holding their coaches to an impossible standard, right, trying to win a national championship. They've won one national championship since World War II, and it was a shared national championship. And you think Harbaugh is not good enough because he only wins 10 games a year. For Florida, there's at least a thought process that the expectations are too high, so much so that the AD, Scott Strickland, at the press conference yesterday when they announced Dan Mullen's firing, he was asked about that. He was asked, do you think that the expectations are too high at Florida? And he said no, because what do you expect him to say? He's the athletic director. He wants to win championships, of course. But there's this thought process that Florida is not on that level of competing for national titles every year. If you look at their recent coaches, right, the last four have all kind of been unsuccessful. Are they just doing a bad job hiring, or is it maybe not as easy of a program or as built of a program as we believe trying to compete in the SEC? So that could be a con. I don't know if I buy it, but that's at least a thought process or a theory that, you know, maybe there is a ceiling to Florida. Maybe they aren't as in good of a spot as many would like to believe. This job has not become open yet, so I do hesitate to even talk about it when there's currently a coach in position. But Miami is believed to potentially become open. I would put that at number four behind Florida. Much like USC, you have the history, you have the cachet, you have the U. You used to have, you know, stars and celebrities on the sidelines of those games. You've had plenty of documentaries. You have the cool jerseys, a lot of NFL talent. It's something to fall back on, to try to shoot for, to show what you have accomplished in the past, and you can do it again. As mentioned, Florida is there for the taking. whether it's Florida, Florida State, Miami, some coach is going to be very successful because they start to dominate the in-state recruiting. There's plenty of talent in South Florida for Miami. You're in the ACC, which you can compete in, but again, that's also a con. You're in the ACC, it's not the SEC. And then I'd put Washington 5, Virginia Tech 6, and I struggle with the order of these two. But I look at it, you know, in the Pac-12, maybe that's more of a negative than the ACC, but again, both conferences where you seem to have a path to a championship, but in the ACC, you still have to get past Clemson. If you take over Washington, I mean, they've been a more successful program of late. It was just 2 years ago where Chris Peterson really had them humming along. For Virginia Tech, you have to go back almost a decade when Frank Beamer really had them at their highest level, not so much under Justin Fuente. And the other thing, too, for me, even though you're not replacing Beamer directly, you're replacing the guy who replaced the legend, and that's a good spot to be in, still, that is the standard. You are always going to be compared to that legendary head coach, much like any coach at Alabama from here on out will be compared to Saban. They used to be compared to Bear Bryant. That was hard enough. Now you have Bear Bryant and Nick Saban for Clemson. Right, moving forward, for the rest of history, you'll try to compare him to Dabo because that is the bar, that's the who you shoot for at that program. And so for Virginia Tech, it's more recent. Right, Frank Beamer wasn't there that long ago, two coaches ago. And so I still think this next hire, you're still going to be held to the Frank Beamer standard. Whereas Washington, you know, like Chris Peterson was good, but it wasn't that long ago that they were 0-12 under Ty Willingham, and then Steve Sarkisian had some success. You know, they don't have that guy that's like, oh, you have to meet this standard. And you're out there, out west in the Pac-12, and Washington, they spend a lot of money on those programs. Virginia Tech, meanwhile, they're on the lower end of money spent and facilities. It's close. I put Washington 5. So anyways, all that said, that's how I would order them. I do put USC number 1. If I'm a coach, just say I'm Bob Stoops. I don't think Bob Stoops comes back to coach college football. But you know everybody would be interested in Bob. So if I'm Bob and I'm sitting there and I'm realistically thinking, like, ooh, do I want to get back into college football this year? Well, let me see the options. That's how I would order them. I would say, well, if USC comes calling, maybe. And then LSU next, that'd probably be the next job I'm most interested in. And then Florida, and then Miami, and then Washington and Virginia Tech. And if you're Bob Stoops at that point, you don't even take those calls. I don't think you're coming back to go to Virginia Tech. But that's how I would order those openings. For somebody like Jimmy Sexton, for the hot name in coaching, who's going to draw a lot of interest, I would be most interested in USC. I know it's not the SEC. And that's, you know, like the pinnacle. Coaches want to be in the SEC. Players want to be in the SEC. But go back just 15 years ago when Pete Carroll had USC humming. I mean, it was the biggest show in college football. And you could be like the Clemson of the ACC. What Clemson's doing in the ACC, you could do like Pete Carroll did with USC. Because if you go to LSU, you could have a really good team, but you know it's still a dogfight every week in the SEC. USC, you can have that really good team like we've seen with Clemson. You're going to blow out everybody and still be good enough to compete for national championships. As we say around here about Clemson, right? Work smarter, not harder. If you're a coach and you're looking at those two jobs like, yeah, it's the SEC, but yes, it's the SEC. There's good and bad. Or go out west. Go out to the Pac-12. If you turn USC around, you got no competition. And if you are good enough, you'll be in the playoff. You'll have an easy path to the playoff instead of trying to ram your head into a wall every week battling in the SEC. So I do put USC ahead of LSU at number one. And then Florida, Miami, Washington, Virginia Tech. And it should be a lot of fun following the rumors here in the next couple of weeks to see how these schools fill those jobs. As I said, we're a show that loves rankings. We do a Tuesday top 10 every week. So when we come back, I got another list for you. We got to do our top 10. This may be best served for tomorrow as we get ready for Thanksgiving, but it's the rules of the show. We have to do a top 10 list every Tuesday, so we're going to do it when we come back as we get ready for Thanksgiving. The 10 best things for Thanksgiving. I'm here to help you out for any of those last-minute planners trying to get your holiday ready this week. We're here to help with our Tuesday Top 10 coming up when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, we're here to help you for your Thanksgiving holiday. It's our annual top 10 list for Thanksgiving of the best things to have on Thursday for you last-minute planners. In case you're concerned, maybe it's your first hosting Thanksgiving, you're having the family over, you're concerned. We all have our family traditions and our typical menus and such, but I'm here to give you the definitive top 10 list, and we'll do it in just a moment here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We do a top 10 list every Tuesday. I was thinking maybe I would rank the 10 best things about Thanksgiving. Family, sure, but, you know, football's number one, right? And then all the great food, family, you take a nap, maybe you play a football game with the fam out in the yard. Those are all great things. I don't know if I could come up with 10. You know, like, what are your traditions for Thanksgiving? My family, we didn't really have any. You would eat, you nap, you watch football. Back in the day, maybe we'd go outside and throw around the football a little bit, and that was it. It's the three Fs. You don't need a list of 10. It's about the three things: food, football, family. That's why we love Thanksgiving. So we do it every year. It's an easily debated thing. We all have our own favorites. The 10 best things about Thanksgiving, I'm doing strictly food here. The 10 best food items. And maybe this list is best served tomorrow leading into Thanksgiving. But we do a top 10 list every Tuesday, so why not get to it now? My definitive may be updated. I'd have to go back and look at my rankings from years past. But this is how I'm feeling today. Our 2021 top 10 best things to eat on Thanksgiving.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
There's been a real debate for certain people who work in sports talk who have lasagna on Thanksgiving. And there's one particular host named Zach Gelb who is on CBS Sports. You can hear him. Throughout the he's maybe on some of our stations as well at times. But he has been starting a campaign. His family, they do lasagna on Thanksgiving because he believes the turkey, and some people do ham. He thinks that's overrated. I'm team turkey. But to start my top 10 list, I go ham number 10. Now, my family, we do turkey. I know some people do ham. I like ham. I like turkey. You don't get it very often. I mean, you may get the cold cuts at the store for your sandwich, but it's not the same thing as when you get the bird, right, the turkey for Thanksgiving, and you cut it up. Oh, it's real good. Ham, the reason why I put it behind turkey may make you sleepy. Ham makes you thirsty. I'd rather be sleepy than thirsty, right? You have ham. You're thirsty the rest of the night. You're waking up in the middle of the night with a dry mouth. I like ham. We would do ham on Easter. Our family, it's really the only time you get a real, you know, like a honey-baked ham. Doing ham number 10, turkey number 9. I think both are a little overrated. When I sit down at the Thanksgiving table, the thing I eat the least amount is probably the turkey. I love all the sides, so I put them at the back end of my list. Ham 10, turkey 9. The reason why I put turkey above ham, I got no problem knocking out on the couch and taking a nice nap on Thanksgiving. That's fine with me. But I don't want to be thirsty the rest of the day like ham makes me thirsty. Number 8, I'm going to say dessert. Now, this is a broad topic, but just desserts in general. Now, I got a big sweet tooth. So really, I would normally say desserts like number 1, but the Thanksgiving desserts are really slacking. It's a bunch of pies, and I'm not a big pie guy. I could do a little pumpkin pie. That's okay. That's about it. We have a family recipe. I mean, it's not like our family invented it, but I have never met anyone else who eats a Watergate pie. My grandmother makes it. I like that. I'll eat a Watergate pie. Google it if you've never heard of it. Most people don't know what it is. It's fantastic. But most pies, I'm not big on. I've gotten into this argument. In fact, I think it was last Thanksgiving, the same time of the year, I got into this debate. I think it was with Bobby. Desserts need chocolate. You want to give me like a chocolate pie, I'm all for it. But desserts need chocolate. I'm not a big pie guy. So for this specific holiday, I only put desserts number 8. I love desserts, but if you're giving me all pies like you usually do for Thanksgiving, I got to drop you down in the top 10. It's not top 5 worthy. Pies, not good enough. Number 7, I'm going with the Brussels sprouts. Now, not everybody may do Brussels sprouts, but you should. Now, you have to do them just right, right? Brussels sprouts have a bad rep. They're very underrated, underappreciated. They may not smell great. As a kid, you hear Brussels sprouts. You don't want to eat Brussels sprouts. But the way they're done specifically, like at restaurants, you go out to a nice restaurant, you get some Brussels sprouts, the way they make them, and they're kind of like charred. Oh, those are so good. I never ate Brussels sprouts as a kid. Now I go out to eat when I see them on the appetizer menu, right? Even if it's not Thanksgiving, or I see them as a side, some of the restaurants you go to in the Charles, oh, I love those, the way they cook them in the restaurant. I'm not a cook, so I can't do it at home. But the way they cook them and they grill them up or whatever they do, oh, so good. Not just any sort of normal Brussels sprout. I don't want to throw a Brussels sprout in the oven, pull it out, and eat it. I'm not talking about that. It's got to be made properly, but that's number 7 on the list. Number 6, I go with rolls. Now, I love bread. It's a problem, right? You got to cut out the carbs. I love bread. When I go out to eat, you got to have the rolls. You got to have the bread before the meal on the table. The problem is, here's my issue. I'm not a big, like, buttered bread type of guy. I go more of the bread with the olive oil. So for Thanksgiving, a lot of times, you go over to somebody's house. It's that, you know, it's like that that buttered bread. It's like the bread that you get, and it's very good. Don't get me wrong. It's just not number one on my list. Like when you go to like a Texas Roadhouse or something like that, those types of rolls. I'm more of like an Italian bread, a French bread, like a little bit of a harder bread that I'm dipping into olive oil instead of the mushy stuff that you put butter on or that it's already kind of buttered. It's like a slippery roll. Nah, I'm not as big into those. Or the rolls that you can just crumple in your hand. My bread needs to be, I like it when it's a little bit stiffer, right? A little bit harder to chew on. So, again, a little nitpicking, but I put rolls at only number 6 because I prefer just like a French bread in olive oil. Number 5, any sort of casserole. Casseroles are another one. I think casseroles get a little bit of a bad rep. Casseroles play a big role in Thanksgiving. Now, your family may do the casserole any type of way. You may do a sweet potato casserole. You may do a green bean casserole. My family, I don't know if it's technically a casserole, but I'm going to put it in this category. We would always do the broccoli. And it would have, like, olives in there, and it would have the breadcrumbs and everything. Very good. So any type of thing like that, that can be classified or it's close to a casserole, usually it's a staple on the Thanksgiving table. A lot of people think it's overrated. It's not necessary. I appreciate a good casserole where you're not just getting a vegetable, but you're getting something to it to jazz it up. Because we all know, right, sometimes it can be tough to eat your veggies. But if you give me broccoli with some olives in there, some olive oil maybe, and, you know, some breadcrumbs mixed in and so it's baked, that's pretty good. I can eat that. Number 4, a little bit of a cheat code here. We're going leftover sandwich. As good as the meal is on Thanksgiving, it's even better the next day when you go into the kitchen and you just grab everything and put it all together and you make a sandwich. I prefer turkey. I put turkey number 9 on this list. I think turkey's better the next day. There are certain things that are better the next day. Some people believe pizza's better the next day. You don't even have to warm it up. You could eat it cold out of the fridge the next day. It's even better. I don't know if I'd go that far. A lot of times to me, pasta is better the next day for whatever reason. When I heat up pasta the next day, it's better than when I get it fresh at the restaurant or whenever I cook it at home. The leftover pasta tastes better. I don't know why. Maybe because it's sitting in the sauce overnight. I don't know what it is. It's fantastic. Same with Thanksgiving. Better than just having turkey on Thursday with the family is waking up on Friday, going to the fridge, and putting it all together. Because now you're getting it all at once. You're getting a turkey sandwich, but you throw the stuffing on there. If you like the cranberry, you throw that on there. You put the gravy, the mashed, you do it all. So much so that restaurants now have noticed this. And now you could get like a Thanksgiving pizza where it's got all that stuff on a pizza. You can go out to a restaurant. They'll make you a sandwich this week like that, with turkey and mashed potatoes and all that stuff. Restaurants are realizing, wait a minute, this is the way to go, combining it all into one like you do the next day. Nothing better. Well, there's a few things. I'll get to them in just a moment. Only a few things better than Thanksgiving leftovers. So I do the leftover sandwich number 4. Obviously, you're not going to have that on your Thanksgiving meal, but it's something to look forward to the next day. Only better than that, 3 things. And it's not debatable. Number 3, mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes is number 3. I love a good mashed potatoes. You can make them creamy. You can make them cheesy. Got to have a good mashed potatoes on Thanksgiving. But not just a bland mashed potato. It's a holiday. You got to jazz it up. Like I said, throw some cheese on there. Throw some bacon in the mashed potatoes if you want. Make them a little extra creamy this year. It's a holiday. Mashed potatoes, number 3. Number 2, mac and cheese. And now I grew up in the Northeast. We really didn't do mac and cheese on Thanksgiving. But I've been in the South now about 8 years. It's the second best thing about Thanksgiving, or really any meals around here. Always got to have the mac and cheese. I love mac and cheese. But I've always said I'm very strict about the mac and cheese. It can't be Kraft mac and cheese. Don't give me this cheesy, soupy mac and cheese. You got to do it right, like most people do in these parts, where, you know, you bake it and you take it out of the oven. Oh, it's so good. I love a good homemade mac and cheese. I talk about this all the time. You go to any of the local barbecue joints, they do a great job with the mac and cheese. That's what I'm looking for. Sometimes you go to a place, you get the mac and cheese, it's like a soup, right? It's like the shells or noodles just in a bowl of cheese. That's not what I want. I don't want it to be soupy. I want it to be nice and almost a little overcooked. Mac and cheese, number 2. And number 1 should be number 1 on everyone's list, of course, is the stuffing. You can call it whatever you want. My family, we grew up calling it stuffing. I don't care what you call it. It's the best. Stuffing is number 1. It's the thing I look forward to most. It's a crime that we only eat stuffing really once a year, at least if you're a normal person, right? How many times do you actually eat stuffing in the year? Only this week. I love stuffing. I could eat it every day. It's fantastic. Best part of the meal. I've shared the story before, but one time Thanksgiving was ruined. I don't remember the exact year. I remember Bruce Gradkowski was playing quarterback for the Buccaneers, and they got blown out that day, and he was terrible. I think they played the Cowboys. I'd have to go back and look the exact year. If you're a Cowboys fan, a Buccaneers fan, you may remember it was that Thanksgiving. And the stuffing, my aunt made it that one year. My aunt made the stuffing, and it was terrible. And it ruined the whole Thanksgiving for me. And I didn't even care that Bruce, you know, that there was a blowout on TV. I just wanted the stuffing. It was lousy. It ruined Thanksgiving. I still haven't gotten over it. It's one of the Thanksgivings I remember most. I can't tell you about most Thanksgivings, but I can tell you about that one and how bad the stuffing was. Stuffing is number one on the list for the best thing to have on Thursday, and I wish it was acceptable or more common to eat stuffing year-round. And there you go. The 2021 top 10 list for the Morrow Midday Show. Ham, turkey, pies, Brussels sprouts, rolls, whatever casserole you want to do, the leftover sandwich the next day, and then the top three I think is pretty obvious. Mashed potatoes, mac and cheese, and stuffing in that order. Maybe you're a turkey guy or gal, but for me, when it comes to Thanksgiving, the turkey's the thing. You don't even need to put the turkey on the table. It's the thing I care about the least. Give me all the sides. Give me the mashed potatoes, the mac and cheese, the stuffing. You know, give me a nice roll, some broccoli, some Brussels sprouts, and I'm good to go. And I'm not a gravy guy. I'm not a cranberry guy. Those aren't, I know, are common things as well. I don't need any gravy. I'll eat that turkey dry, fine with me. Leave the gravy out of it. Don't need any cranberry. Anything else? Sweet potato, eh, okay, maybe in a casserole. Casserole improves everything. But there you go. There's the top 10 list. And hopefully you'll have all 10 of those things on Thanksgiving and have a great holiday. You're welcome. Latest update, by the way, on Coach Baucom. We've just been talking about this throughout the afternoon. Scary situation last night at Cameron Indoor. He has now been released from the hospital at Duke over there, and he's on his way back to Charleston. So certainly continue to send our thoughts and prayers to Coach and his family. That's good news. He's out of the hospital and on his way back to town to meet with the team. They play next on Sunday. We'll see if Coach is in a position in which he could be on the sideline coaching the team Sunday or you know, what's next for him. But certainly good news that he's out of the hospital and heading home, and we continue to send our best here from the Morrow Midday Show to Coach and his family in what was a scary situation last night. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Fun, a funky finish to your Tuesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll be back on Friday as well, only off Thursday for the holiday. We stay working for you. Except I haven't worked a day. I still haven't worked a day yet in my life. So, well, looking forward to Friday, the football Friday. Get ready for a great weekend of college football. Obviously, Clemson, South Carolina. We'll get into that as the week moves forward. College football playoff rankings coming out tonight. We touched on this earlier. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. I don't think there's a lot of drama left in these rankings, and that's the great thing this year. We can clamor and complain about the committee. I'm sure we'll do it again in the next 24 hours. Maybe I'll have some gripe with them when we're on the air tomorrow. But the great thing about college football, at least for this year, it may not always work out this way, but this year is that it's all going to be decided by the teams throughout the year. The playoff has already begun. Michigan State, that was their playoff last week. They're out. They're done. Ohio State advances. They take on Michigan this week. That's their playoff. One of those two teams is going to advance. The other one, they're done. Cross them off. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. That's the Big 12's playoff. Right? You're going to cross one of them off. The other one's going to advance. Cincinnati, Notre Dame already played each other this year. Since he got the win, that should go a long way. Alabama and Georgia are going to play one another. So we can get all ticked off and have these debates. And look, I'm as guilty as anybody. That's part of the job here. But really, when you look at it in college football this year, it's all playing out already. The playoff has already begun. I'm curious to see where they put Cincinnati tonight. I guess that's the one last piece. And maybe also to see if Ohio State jumps Alabama at this point. Right? Alabama, they've played three teams that are combined 7-15 in the SEC to one-score games. Arkansas, LSU, Florida. Don't be mesmerized by Saban, Alabama, the Crimson Tide. They have not played like most Alabama teams or like you would expect. And Ohio State, they've had some more dominant wins lately. But at the end of the day, it's all going to come down to these next 2 weeks. Georgia versus Bama, Michigan versus Ohio State, Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State. We'll see what happens. We're down to about the final eight teams in the conversation for the college football playoff. Whatever happens, we'll be here to react to it tomorrow. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we'll say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.